I was in college in the late 1960s and the early 70s, a time of radical social change. Like many others, I was influenced by the social tone and social change of those days. Hanging on my wall was a poster containing a poem, which spoke to me then and has spoken to me my entire life since. It may be familiar to me. Matter of fact, I have no doubt that with all the poets and other literary people in this room, some of you will know it. You will know it from the first two words, all right? However, I'm not giving a prize, all right? I will tell you what it is and a little bit about that. Here's the poem. Go placidly amid the noise and haste, and remember what peace there may be in silence. And as far as possible, without surrender, be on good terms with all persons. Speak your truth quietly and clearly and listen to the others. Even the dull and ignorant, they too have their story. Avoid loud and aggressive persons. They are vexatious to the spirit. If you compare yourself with others, you may become vain or bitter. For always there would be greater and lesser persons than yourself. Enjoy your achievements as well as your plans. Keep interested in your own career, however humble. It is a real possession in the changing fortunes of time. Exercise caution in your business affairs, for the world is full of trickery. But let this not blind you to what virtue there is. Many persons strive for high ideals, and life is full of heroism everywhere. Be yourself, especially do not feign affection. Neither be cynical about love, for in the face of all aridity and disenchantment, it is as perennial as the grass. Take kindly the counsel of the years, gracefully surrendering the things of youth. Nurture strength of spirit to shield you in sudden misfortune. But do not distress yourself with dark imaginings. Many fears are born of fatigue and loneliness. Beyond a wholesome discipline, be gentle with yourself. You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a right to be here. And whether or not it is clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Therefore, be at peace with God, whatever you conceive him to be. Oh, wait a minute. Before this audience, I need to make a correction. All right. Therefore, be at peace with God, whatever you conceive him or her to be. And whatever your labors and aspirations in the noisy confusion of life, keep peace in your soul. With all its sham, drudgery, and broken dreams, it is still a beautiful world. Be cheerful. Strive to be happy. This poem is titled Desiderata and was written by Max Ehrman, an Indiana boy like myself. He graduated from DePaul University, which was 30 miles down the road from my college, Wabash College. I know the poem was popular in Indiana, but I think its popularity extended far beyond. Ehrman said toward the end of his life, "At DePaul, I contracted a disease which I have never shaken off. The disease was idealism. Because of it, I did the thing in life that I wanted to do, writing." And indeed, he did write, not entirely, but for much of the rest of his life. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I too must admit that I too suffer from the disease of idealism. Perhaps that's why I'm a Unitarian Universalist. However, I formed the opinion long ago that it is far better to have a fault that you are aware of than to have a fault that you are not aware of. My idealism is very much a known fault for which I take full responsibility. Desiderata, the poem's title, means desired things. I looked on this poem as an instruction book for life, just someone in college desires and needs. And indeed, this poem has instructed me throughout my entire life. The final words of this poem are, "Strive to be happy." It is important to note that it says, "Strive to be happy," and that it does not simply say, "Be happy." Happiness is a task. I have long felt that you cannot make the spirit of life dwell with you. But what you can do is to structure your life and live your life in a fashion which is conducive to the spirit. This invites the spirit to dwell with you and within you. And so it is with happiness. You cannot make yourself happy, but you can structure your life and live your life in a fashion which is conducive to happiness. With awareness, you knowingly take on the task of happiness. In my talk today, when I speak of happiness, I am not referring to some short-lived state of mind caused by external forces as seeing a good movie or, believe it or not, eating a piece of chocolate cheesecake. I am referring to a deeper underlying state of mind of internal causation. Happiness is a deep, persistent, and universal obsession for humanity. From the very beginning, Americans in particular have made happiness a central piece of their national quest. When the founders of our nation gathered in Philadelphia in 1776 to draft the official statement of the principles upon which the new republic was to be built, they decided that happiness was so important and good that they wrote it into the preamble. And you all, you know, would know this. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Some would say that happiness is something that everybody wants, but in my experiences, this is not always true. I swear I have known people who do not wish to be happy. They seem to strive to be miserable. If the bluebird of happiness alights upon their shoulder, they will do something to cause it to fly away so that the cloud of misery and doom can hover over them again. This is strange but true, and I think we have all witnessed this. A widely held belief is that happiness is related to wealth and possessions, which is true to some degree. In particular, if one does not have enough money to provide the basic staples of life, then the result may be an abiding unhappiness. Comedian Joan Rivers once quipped, "People say that money is not the key to happiness, but I always figured if you have enough money, you can have a key made." But time again, in the wisdom of poets and religious scripture, we hear that more money does not equal more happiness. Despite what our consumer culture would have us believe, more stuff does not fulfill us. Christian scripture in 1 Timothy says, "The love of money is the root of all evil." And going to someone more popular than Jesus, John Lennon sings, "I don't care too much for money, because money can't buy me love." And yet others have accurately said that money can be used to buy things that can make us happy, or it can demonstrate our values or our love, and that can make us happy, but there are limitations to that. Now, in 2008, I spent 6 weeks in India on business, and I did have several occasions to go off and travel to nearby areas in India. And I was amazed to find the poor village children to be, on the whole, cheerful and happy. I was stunned by their laughter and eagerness as they frolicked, even though they may have lived in conditions that we might not think that possible. So I will never again take for granted my own copious blessings as an American. It is amazing the routes that some people take to get to happiness: booze, drugs, and so on. Some people don't go to church anymore for peace of mind. They run to the pharmacy. Pursuing happiness in the form of pleasure can bring about short-term changes. Thanks to advances in neuroscience, we now have a much better understanding of how differences and substances affect our brain chemistry. We also understand more about the biochemistry of addiction. The brain adapts quickly to pleasure-producing chemicals, and it requires greater amounts of them in order to produce the same pleasurable effect. That is why people can become addicted not only to drugs and alcohol, but also to certain forms of pleasure-producing activity, such as sports, sex, and video games. Ultimately, the pursuit of happiness as a pleasure can become self-defeating and often self-destructive. In the poem Desiderata, it says, "Exercise caution in your business affairs." But one should also say it is also highly important to exercise caution in your pursuit of happiness. Our expectations have a large influence on how we perceive the world and how we perceive the events in our life. Thus, our expectations also have a large influence on our happiness. I once met a fellow who was an accomplished person, smart, healthy, a good businessman, a nice fellow. But he had expectations of himself that were so high to be almost unattainable, nay, they were virtually impossible. He was only happy with himself if he earned over $250,000 a year. His body mass index was under 20, and he was able to run a 5K in under 15 minutes, and so on. Almost needless to say, he was not a happy person. His goals and expectations were so exceedingly high that it set him up for failure. It set him up to be unhappy. On the other hand, there was another fellow who decided that he was happy as long as he was breathing above ground. Now, he may have been happy, but his expectations may have been a bit low. I always emphasize the importance of balance in one's life, a balance of all things, physical, emotional, and spiritual. As the poem Desiderata says, strive for high ideals, but it also says, be gentle with yourself. Now, my favorite self-help book of all time is The Road Less Traveled by M. Scott Peck, which some of you are probably familiar with. And it starts with three very powerful words. Life is difficult. The first paragraph, which is short, is life is difficult. This is the great truth, one of the greatest truths. It is a great truth because once we truly see the truth that it is, we transcend it. Once we know that life is difficult, once we truly understand and accept it, then life is no longer difficult. Because once it is accepted, the fact that life is difficult no longer matters. Being aware that life is difficult is also a key to happiness. If you know that life is and is meant to be difficult, then during times of difficulty, you can maintain your perspective and still strive for happiness. But if you naively or foolishly think that life should be easy, then you have very much set yourself up for frequent bouts of unhappiness. So it is a paradox. The understanding that life is difficult makes life much less difficult and therefore more open to happiness. M. Scott Peck later states, life is complex. Each one of us must make his own path through life. There are no self-help manuals, no formulas, no easy answers. The right road for one person is the wrong road for another person. The journey of life is not paved in blacktop. It is not brightly lit. It has no road signs. It is a rocky path through the wilderness. Fortunately, with family and community, we do not have to walk that path alone. Now, I need to tell you about tea bags. Now, I didn't say about, fortunes from tea leaves. This is tea bags. Now, my wife, Pam, usually has a cup of tea each morning, and at the end of the string is a tag on which is written a message. Well, on Wednesday of this week, the message was, happiness is actually an art of living which is in us. And then on Friday, the message was, the gate to happiness is self-compassion. Now, Pam knew I was working on my sermon on happiness, so I quite logically interpreted these messages to be of divine origin. Right? Since they were given to Pam, they must have come from a goddess. And this was confirmed by the fact that on each message tag, there was a wee bit of fingernail polish. And the color was just divine. But whatever the origin of these teabag messages, they do comport well with my message today. Happiness is an art of living which is internal in us. And to say that the gate to happiness is self-compassion agrees well with be gentle with yourself. So thank you, Goddess of Pam. I have stated that you cannot make yourself happy, but you can condition yourself to be open to happiness. In the Book of Joy by the Dalai Lama, he says this, no dark fate determines the future, we do. each day and each moment, we're able to create and recreate our lives and the very quality of human life on our planet. This is the power we yield. Sadly, many of the things that undermine our joy and happiness, we create ourselves. Often it comes from the negative tendencies of the mind, emotional reactivity, or from the inability to appreciate and utilize the resources that exist within us. The suffering from a natural disaster we cannot control, but the suffering from our daily disasters we can. We create most of our suffering, so it should be logical that we have the ability to create more joy and happiness. It simply depends on the attitudes, the perspectives, and the reactions we bring to situations and to our relationships with other people. Materialistic values cannot give us peace of mind, at least not permanently. So we really need to focus on our inner values, our true humanity. Only this way can we have peace of mind and more peace in our world. A lot of problems we are facing are our own creation, like war and violence. Unlike a natural disaster, these problems are created by humans themselves. For today's hymns, for the hymn for today's services, I told our music director, Scott, that I wanted to have some happy, upbeat hymns. And Scott suggested four hymns, and I selected two of them, which were the ones that we sang today. Now, I chose them because they address a life that conditions us for happiness. Our first hymn said, "When our heart is in a holy place, we are blessed with love and amazing grace." Now, when you live with your heart in a holy place, you have opened yourself up to happiness. You have invited happiness to dwell with you and within you. Our second hymn said, "Oh, we give thanks for this precious day. I consider gratitude to be a vital prerequisite for a spiritual life and thus a vital prerequisite for happiness." So whether or not you're aware of it, today you did take a few steps to condition yourself toward happiness. Whether this was in accordance with your will or against your will, you were conditioned for happiness. So thank you, Scott, for assisting me in this social manipulation. One chief pathway to happiness is to seek a meaningful life. We apply our signature strengths in service to something much larger than ourselves. I think that is why so many Unitarian Universalists find their way into teaching or human or social services. It is why some of us come to church and serve on teams and committees and boards. We are serving a mission that is larger than ourselves. We are trying to do our bit to repair a broken world. For some of us, the life has a religious context. The Dalai Lama, by now you figured, should have figured out, I like the Dalai Lama, was asked what it was like to wake up with joy, and he said, "I think if you are an intensely religious person, as soon as you wake up, you thank God for another day, and you try to do God's will. For a non-theist like myself, but who is a Buddhist, as soon as I wake up, I remember Buddhist teaching, the importance of kindness and compassion. Wishing something good for others, or to at least reduce their suffering. So then I set my intention for the day, that this day should be meaningful, where meaningful means, if possible, serve and help others. If not possible, then at least not to harm others. That's a meaningful day." And so, day by day, we can, like the Dalai Lama, build a meaningful life. In Viktor Frankl's phenomenal book, entitled Man's Search of Meaning, we read the thoughtful response to his experience in a Nazi concentration camp. He had established teen suicide prevention centers in Vienna prior to being taken by the Nazis. His suicide prevention work continued at the camp. He said that people who survived the camp were those who had a reason to survive. Frankl saw that the difference came down to whether or not their life still held a meaningful purpose, a reason for existence. And further, meaningfulness is always about something greater than oneself. Happiness, narrowly defined as a selfish pursuit of pleasure, has no place when set against what Viktor Frankl is talking about. But happiness, defined more deeply and relationally, is a natural outgrowth of a meaningful life. Frankl said happiness should not be pursued so much as ensued. He means happiness should follow. Seek meaning, we will find happiness in the long run. But seeking happiness, we have no guarantee of ever finding meaning, and what a mistake that would be. It seems to me if you want to talk about behaviors that will bring you happiness, look to the behaviors that are active rather than passive, and behaviors that connect you socially to others through play, shared work, charity, and gift giving. If you want to talk about personal attitudes that will bring you happiness, look to meaning. Meaning is developed by connections. Happiness is developed by connections and meaning. Make the connections, live the meaningful life. Then go placidly amid the noise and haste. Be cheerful, strive to be happy.